It is on. It is the 10th of March, right? Is it recording? Yeah, it's recording. Yesterday, I thought I pressed it, didn't. All right, we got a lot to do today. Look how many people are not here. It's sad, but what are you going to do? And today is a down day for the market. Yesterday was the 6th anniversary of the beginning of this current bull market, March 9th, 2009. When everyone thought the world was going to end and the Antichrist had been elevated. And yet, Obama's been one of the best presidents. You wouldn't think it. If he were a Republican, the Republicans would be jumping up and down and say, look at how great the stock market's done. I'm our president. What's wrong with the Democrats? Why don't they do the same? They're stupid. I don't know. They're dumb. Anyway, do you want to sell anything? Want to buy anything? It's a good time to buy, good time to sell. No? Just hang tight? We'll hang tight. All right, so we'll do that. We have a Chapter 5 assignment due this Thursday. So we have a couple questions about the Chapter 5 assignment. And then tentative, we're not sure how much we're going to get done today, Tuesday and next Thursday. We have the exam for 5, which is Introduction to Stocks. All the stuff we've been doing, I know it's a lot of material, but you really have to know it. And then we'll start today, maybe not, but on Tuesday and Thursday, we'll go through the calculations in Chapter 6. The calculations are easier than the concepts. Concepts, you really don't understand what you're doing at first, and maybe even potentially will, but the calculations are actually not that hard once you've done it a few times, and we will do them several times. All right, so let's get going on. Oh, before we do that, we had a question on the assignment. So if we take a look at the assignment sheet, the stock market assignment sheet here, you're going to be filling in all these pieces of information. And most of them are pretty straightforward. The exchange listed is one of those things that if it were a snake, it would bite you. Because if we take a look up one of these stocks, take a look, say, I put Neurocrine, right? So if we look up Neurocrine, oh, there it is, NBIX. Look, right there, it tells you. NASDAQ, don't take anything on my desk. And right there, it tells you, right? Oh, come on. Did I click that? NBIX. It tells you, what the hell is going on? Yahoo, I don't know, folks. I got to tell you, I'm adding it. That's the problem. I was looking, I was doing a symbol. Here it is. I keep adding it to the portfolio. Thank you. Uh-oh, somebody lost their card. Oh, it's a joke. It's not real. H&R Block client. Okay. Here it is. I was putting the wrong one, and I was adding it to our portfolio. But right here is NASDAQ. The GS stands for Global Select. I don't care if you know that. There are three markets in the NASDAQ. Global Select, it's the next one, and then Capital Markets Select. And Global Select, and then Capital Markets. But you don't have to know that, just NASDAQ. There's the market capitalization price-to-earnings ratio. Why does it say NA? Well, what's their earnings? Negative earnings, so the price-to-earnings ratio, it doesn't apply. There's the dividends, NA, right? No dividends, and the yield is in parentheses, no yield. Now, the tricky one is the key statistics, because that's where the book value is. If you click on book key statistics and go to the bottom, you'll find the book value right here. There's the book value. If you're looking, do I see that? Do you see book value per share? And then if you look at the profile, it will tell you what sector of the economy it is. I like the industry better because the sector of the economy is sometimes not very good, but the industry it's in is drugs, you know. They're in the drug business. So any questions, any thoughts? Then the earnings calls for the companies, if you go to the website, and they have the company website right here, Investor Relations homepage. You go to the Investor Relations homepage. Not found. Not a good sign. Investors here. You will see their event calendar and their annual meetings and their shareholder stuff. And what we're looking for are the latest earnings call. So that should be under event calendar. And we should find the earnings for the next one. Where is it? Upcoming events. Past events. We want past events. When's the next earnings call? I don't have my glasses. earnings call conference. So here on February 9th, they had their quarter number four for 2014 earnings call, and often they will keep the audio or they'll have a PDF. So if we click on that, we can click here for the webcast. So we can actually listen to it. And that's what your part of your assignment is. Question? That's what we're going to do today. Stock, the last column we're going to go through today. I apologize. We're about a week behind. And that's why it's coming up right now. So that's a good question. I love it when the students ask a question that bring you right to where we were. And that's where we were, right here. We had started on the different stock types. But first, do we need a good joke? Or maybe it's not a good day for a good joke. You guys kind of look down. Yes, let's hear.
For Greg Huffington, no, not Joe Greg Huffington. The stock type is drugs, right?
I would put down pharmaceuticals. No. For this guy, the stock type. No, I was talking. I thought you were talking about the sector of the economy. No, Neurocrine, but no. Take a look at Neurocrine. They are a startup. They're a growth company. If they grow, they've been very unsteady. They're one of these biotech companies that may become worth billions of dollars, or they may fall into the porcelain oasis and go down the drain. So, yeah, that's a tough one. Put down growth for that one. Okay, so now let's continue here. We had gone through the blue chip and the income stocks, and then, what about the joke? Who wants a joke? Oh, guys, you don't even want a joke. Did I tell you about the dumb guy that walked around the world? He drowned. No bar joke today. I'll get back to the bar jokes later. Okay, so we had gone through the blue chip, which are the biggest companies, income companies, which are paying us dividends, and then growth. And the growth stocks are the stars. And this is where we ended off. Because what you're going to hear and see and feel when you start getting into the investment world is the terms growth and value. The meanings of the terms are not exact, in my humble opinion. Typically, investors often use the word growth to designate a high PE stock. And we saw some stocks with very high PEs. And they will use the word value to denote a low PE stock. That's often why the income stocks are often called value stocks, because they have low price to earnings ratios. In other words, investors are not excited about their prospects. They're not growing or growing very slowly and throwing off dividends and income to cash to investors' pockets. But the problem with this is I don't use the word value to just mean something that has a low PE. Something that has a low PE might not be a good value, or it might be a good value. And something that has a high PE might be a good value. It's going to be more risky, obviously, because it's more growth-oriented. Investors have bid up the price quite high. But here's a wonderful example. In January of 2005, Google was selling for around $200. With a sky-high PE. I think it was 78 or something like that, kind of like Facebook now. While the old GM was selling for $34, but with a very low PE, paying a healthy dividend, losing a ton of money. Today, Google sells for around $1,100, now it's split-adjusted because it split two for one, so I think it's 550, with a much lower PE in the 20s, and the old GM stock, which was renamed Motors Liquidation. I know you might not believe me, but that's what it was renamed. Last sold for 4 cents in March of 2011 and now is worthless. So which one was the better value? Right. But in the investment world, they would use the word value for the GM because it was a low PE, and they would use the word growth for Google because it was a high PE. Do you understand? You have to, it doesn't mean you shouldn't do it. You shouldn't join in the crowd and use the word growth for high PE stocks and value for low PE stocks. But just remember that value, from a standpoint of the real terminology, means something of worth, right? Comments, criticisms, suggestions? Just be careful. Okay, let's continue. Now, cyclical stocks are companies that follow the cycle of the business cycle, the economy. They follow when the economy is doing well, they do well. When the economy is doing poorly, they do poorly. And any company that makes stuff, basic materials, chemicals, oil, and the timber, the poster child for cyclical stocks are automobiles. Why? Because when the economy is doing well, people are getting jobs, they're getting raises. What do they go do? They go out and buy a new car. How's the old car? I don't care. I want a new car. I like that new car smell. It's good for your liver. Breathe it in. Good for your brain cells. Okay. When the economy's not doing well, what do? Fine. The old car's doing just fine. Thank you very much. And so you see this happen. When the economy does well, automobile manufacturers start making tons of money. GM is sitting on some $50 billion of cash. And when the economy does poorly, recession, people losing their jobs, the automobile manufacturers just get hammered, and their stock follows. Make sense?
So the GM stock went to worthless, but the ML stock is doing okay.
No, the new GM. It's called the new. Well, most people don't say new GM, but GM went through bankruptcy,
right.
And the old GM is gone. Okay. Anybody who held that stock is now worthless.
Okay.
They emerged from bankruptcy, a much smaller, leaner company, and have been doing pretty darn well. In fact, they're doing really well in China, folks. They sell more Buicks in China than they sell here in the United States. And I just heard, I don't know if that person made it, I knew this was true, that they sell more Buicks. Because Buick in China is the Lexus in China. It's the Mercedes-Benz. Now, Mercedes-Benz is doing, and BMW are trying to convince the Chinese that, no, the Americans are, you want a German car. And the Japanese don't do well in China, folks. The Japanese and the Chinese don't like one another. They are very, there's a lot of animosity there. So Toyota and Honda, they're in there, but they're never going to do that well as they did here. Questions, thoughts? Does it make sense? But I heard just yesterday that GM is selling more cars in China than they're selling in the United States. I don't know if that's true. Total cars. But I do know they sell more Buicks than they do here. So the next category are defensive stocks. Now these are the exact opposite of cyclical companies. These are companies that tend to hold their own and even do well when the economy starts to falter. Why? Because these are companies whose products you need no matter what. Do you eat more cornflakes or more Cheerios because the economy is doing well?
No.
No. Do you eat fewer cornflakes? Fewer? You eat fewer? You tighten your belt, right? Do you use less soap because the economy is doing poorly? Do you use more soap? Do you take more insulin or less insulin? You know, you need your drugs, you take your drugs. So food companies, consumer products, they're called consumer staples, drug companies, they tend to be defensive. And it's counterintuitive, but when the economy falters, often these stocks do well. Why? Because people are leaving the growth stocks, they're leaving the cyclical stocks, and rotating into the defensive companies. And then when the economy does well, they're sitting in the corner. Remember equity income funds? Remember the equity income mutual funds? They're very popular with equity income mutual funds. Yes?
So, Procter & Gamble
is Blue Chip? Oh, Procter & Gamble is also a blue chip. Yes.
Yeah.
Procter & Gamble, well, yeah, they're one of the bluest of the blue chips. Definitely. And so, yes, we like Procter & Gamble, folks. Yeah, we like them. They're actually, it's a good time to buy them now. You see, we bought them. They're down 10%. Because they're getting hit, they're getting whammied by the strong dollar and the fact that the rest of the world is in a funk at the very same time that Procter & Gamble is trying to move out to the rest of the world. So it's been a tough hoe for them. Okay, now turnarounds. Turnarounds are companies that have hit on hard times. Often they don't turn around, so I use the term goner. But many of you weren't born yet. But in the early 1980s, Chrysler almost disappeared. In the 1970s, they built some of the worst cars ever seen. You ever hear of the Volare? No? There's a good reason why you haven't heard of it. And they almost disappeared. And for those of you who are into business, you want to take a look at this gentleman, Iacocca. Iacocca. Lee Iacocca. I'm not spelling his name correctly. Is it I-A? I'm not spelling his name correctly. I apologize. But he turned around. Look, he was the guy who actually was the project manager for the Ford Mustang in the mid-60s. He was the one who produced the Ford Mustang. So he's a very smart man, and he brought them back. Now Ford and GM are turnarounds that seem to have turned around. What you have to ask yourself, if you invest in turnarounds, is there a potential for a rebound? Because some companies don't turn around. Have you heard of Kodak? Yeah, they didn't turn around. They tried. They realized, uh-oh, it's about time we get into digital. It was a little too late for that. And then asset plays are companies. This is a little tricky. Asset plays, you have to look beyond the facade of the company. You have to look beyond what people think about the company because they have assets they're sitting on that could be sold or spun off. For example, JCPenney's, everyone thinks of it as a retailer, and they are, but they also have an insurance company. They have an insurance company that sells the baby insurance. People have babies, they sell them insurance for their kids that they don't need, but they make a ton of money off of it. And if they are in trouble, they could sell that asset and stay afloat. Questions, thoughts? There are lots of asset plays. For example, you think of Coke and Pepsi as competitors, right? But are they really? Well, yes, in the fact that they both make beverages, but where's Pepsi's real money coming from? Chips, Frito-Lay, they own Frito-Lay. So you see, that's an asset play there. There's something behind the facade of the company that you have to take a look at. And then the last category are penny stocks. Now, we took a quick look at a few of these. Folks, have I convinced you to stay away from these things? Have I? Good, okay, because you're going to get people saying, oh man, I made a ton of money on this thing. I made a ton of money. Just stay away from them, folks. They are nothing but scams. Yes?
What's the difference
between asset and derivatives?
Derivatives?
Yeah. Well, derivatives are not stocks. Derivatives are a contract, or there are various types of derivatives. But what they do is they make their money by, or they lose their money, based on something else. A derivative would be tied to a stock. There would be a derivative that would do well if the stock did well, or do poorly, or disappear if the stock did poorly, or vice versa. It might do well if the stock does poorly, and then the other way around. And so derivatives are not stocks. They are normally contracts that are based on something else, whereas stock is based on the corporation. Stock represents ownership in a corporation. And these are just types of stocks. These are just various different types of stocks. Did I answer your question? And we're going to take a look at derivatives way at the end of the semester. Yes?
So why are penny stocks scam?
Because most of them are not real companies. Most of them are somebody's garage out in Idaho somewhere. Let's take a look at an example here. Okay. Boom, ba boom, ba boom. I showed you the one that from 2006, but here are a couple of recent ones. Here's Definitive Rest Manufacturing. It was formerly manufactured mattresses, but they're now making materials for aerospace industry. Right. And this is what you get in the mail. Once you are involved and put your email down somewhere, you're going to start getting these things in the mail. Nicely done. We nailed it today. Like I said in our midday email, it looks like today's play still had legs, and oh my, did it ever. It not only saw another double-digit run, but it closed at the high of the day. 4.5 cents. Up over 17%, folks. Volume was about 1.2 million as activity was once high once again. Another awesome day. Grats to those who took the opportunity to benefit. We're on fire right now. We want to keep the streak rolling. Therefore, tonight we have something that we know you're going to love. A new float. Subby play with insane growth potential. We have a triple-digit runner every week this week, except this one, but we still have a couple of days left, so let's get it to it. Here's the new company, Definitive Rest. once engaged in the manufacturing of mattresses, it is now in the aerospace industrial metals sector. It recently acquired new metals technology and formed its new high-tech CNC control division. CNC's been around for 40 years. I don't know what the hell they think it's high-tech. It may not be rocket science, folks, but they build the materials that rocket science used to build rockets, and that's pretty darn awesome! Do you see what's going on? They made mattresses, and now we're going to make high-tech rocket materials. It's all lies. It's not real. It's somebody's garage somewhere, and they got a, maybe they have a storefront. Normally they don't. And all these people are doing is trying to get people to buy the stock, and then they know they got some. When they see the activity go up, and a lot of times what they do is they'll start buying it amongst themselves. They'll start buying it to generate activity, and it looks like there's volume going on, and then they see people get in, and they raise the price a little bit, and people get excited, and they raise the price a little bit more, and they get excited, and they raise the price a little bit more, and then they're gone. They disappear, they pick up, and they move from San Diego to Arizona, and they start a new company. They start using a different company. Because it's totally illegal, by the way. When you start a brokerage account, they're going to ask you, do you have any other brokerage accounts? And if you do, you have to write down what other brokerage accounts you have, and the two brokerage accounts must watch you simultaneously to make sure you're not buying from yourself. Because this stuff's been going on for decades, folks. It's nothing new. Does it make sense? Nod your head yes. Did I answer your question? Yeah, what's the next one? The next one. And I leave myself on these email lists just so I can take a look at them. Here's a company that started last June as a company refurbishing rundown houses, but it now is manufacturing cans and weight loss products. Okay. So do you understand that these are scams? Yes. Now, there's always an exception to the rule. There's always some company out there on the bulletin boards or the pink sheets that really is trying to make it into the big time. The chances are pretty darn small that they ever will, but that's the exception. There are 20-some thousand stocks on the pink sheets and the 23 or 4,000 stocks on the pink sheets and the bulletin boards, and almost all of them are either scams or just basket cases. And then people use them as scams. Did I answer your question? I hope I did. Who was that? Who, yeah, it was, I'm sorry, Chanel. Yeah, did I answer your question? Are you going to stay away from penny stocks? Good. Because I showed you the one, penny stocks made me rich! Well, he was the guy who was selling them. He wasn't the guy who was buying them. He was selling them and then he disappears. It's called pump and dump. It's nothing new. It's been around for decades. It's been around for hundreds of years, actually. They used to do it. The gentlemen would pump and dump each other. And then this last category is actually just a catch-all phrase for any company that's outside the United States, foreign stocks. And, of course, they are, could be any one of these types, but they're just outside the United States. Traditionally, it was difficult for you to buy stocks outside the United States, but not anymore. Companies, brokerage firms now have, excuse me, international global brokerage accounts, and you can buy and sell stocks on other exchanges. Now, what's the catch? You've got to move your dollars to yen or to euros or to pesos. And that's a problem because of currency issues. The stronger U.S. dollar has a negative impact. It's a seesaw. If the dollar gets stronger, then what happens? Anything we've purchased outside the United States, all other things being equal, and of course they never are, becomes worthless. If the dollar goes down, those things outside the United States become worth more. So last year, not only did the dollar strengthen, it's still strengthening now, also the global markets and international markets, I'm sorry, outside the United States, were flat or down. So people who invested globally had a double whammy, and they saw negative 4%, negative 5%, or maybe they were lucky if they were flat. So remember that global means everybody, including the United States, international, except the United States. Traditionally, what people did was they used, I don't have room for it, let's put it down here. They used what are called ADRs, American Depository Receipts. You might see DR, GDR, Global Depository Receipts, or you might just see the term DR. And all these things are, folks, is a big trust company, a big bank in New York or somewhere, goes to Japan and buys a ton of Toyota stock or Sony stock. And then they bring it back to New York, and then they reissue it dollar-denominated. So you can buy Sony, you can buy Toyota on the New York Stock Exchange. They're on there. Let's take a look. I think we looked. Did we look at Toyota? I don't think so. Let's take a look. Quick look at Toyota. And you'll see, it'll say, okay, quote lookup, TM, wrong one. You know, it used to be so good, folks. It used to be, doesn't say it. But sometimes it'll put ADR next to it, or GDR. But here, Toyota in dollars on the New York Stock Exchange. And so it makes it easy for you to buy these companies because you don't have to change your dollars to yen. Questions, thoughts? Okay, let's continue. Now, market cap. Okay, so if you have worksheet number two, do you have worksheet number two? Worksheet number two. I'm almost out of them. Okay. Here, you can take Betsy. She left it here. Worksheet number two. I'm out of them. That's the end. And this is what you're going to do. And don't worry about, because sometimes there are just some categories that companies either are two or three in, or you know what? Don't worry about it. If you don't have it, I'll call it up on the screen. Okay, worksheet number two. Boom, boom. So for the following stocks, name the type of stock that you believe fits the stock. Is it a blue chip, income growth, cyclical, defensive, turnaround, asset play, foreign, or penny? So what about Ford? What would you put Ford?
Blue chip.
Blue chip. Well, it was, right? It was a blue chip for decades. Where is it now? Yeah, well, actually, it's coming back, isn't it? Ford's North American operations are doing very, very well, folks. They are building cars that in the United States, Mexico, Canada, people want to buy. They are having a tough time in Europe, and they're just starting to get into Asia. If their pickup trucks become popular in Asia, they will do very well. Yes? Oh, they are, yeah, that's the problem with Ford, right. They're a car company, so normally we would put them cyclical, but they have the potential to grow very quickly if they catch on in Asia. That's a big if. Plus, for decades, they were a blue chip. Are they now? We might say that they're a turnaround, and we might say that they've turned around, but wait till the next recession. We'll see. So it's difficult. Where would you put Ford? Cyclical is the best choice, but it's up to you. If you wanted to put growth, you'd be fine. If you wanted to put turnaround, I don't think they're going to disappear, folks. I don't think Ford's going to disappear, but it doesn't mean they won't. Yes?
What's the main reason there would be a turnaround then?
Because they went through a near-death experience in 2008-09. Chrysler, GM, and Ford almost disappeared. All three of them. Now, if you remember, I don't know if you remember this, but you remember they went before Congress and asked for loans, and they flew in their private jets?
Yeah.
Really bad, dumb, stupid. The next time they went before Congress, what did they do? They took a bus from Detroit to Washington. Do you remember that? Do you not remember? What?
Didn't they pay back everything?
Oh, they paid back everything. Oh, yeah, they paid back everything. But it was genius. If you're into business, you look up the Iacocca, and also look, Jim Mulally. No, is that his name? Oh, darn it. I'm getting old, folks. Look at the CEO of Ford. This guy is a genius. What's his last name? Mulally, right? He came from the CEO of Ford. He came from Boeing. And he has done a great job. In fact, I don't know if he has retired. He announced he's going to retire, just stock fell. And people, no, he's not going to retire just yet. He came from Boeing. And what he did is he was totally, you know, anathema. Is that what the word means? Totally against or totally in opposition to the Detroit culture. They were going to pick him up at work, at home, and drive him, chauffeur him. He said, no, you don't want to do that. You give me a different Ford car every month. I want a different Ford car. I'm driving to work and I'm driving home. And they said, okay, boss. And within a couple of months, he said, this is ridiculous, folks. You walk into a BMW, you know you're in a BMW. You get in a Toyota, you know you're in a Toyota, right? I don't know you motorheads. I'm not a motorhead. I don't like cars. I don't even have a car anymore. I sold it. But I share one with my son now because he doesn't drive that much either. But he said, when you get in a Ford, I want those people to know they're in a Ford. And they said, yes, boss. And have you noticed Fords are really more popular? Have you or have you not? I don't know. You probably know more. Yeah, they're much more popular in North America. And then when 2008-09 came along and GM and Chrysler begged for money, went through bankruptcy, Ford said, no, we're not going to do that. We're not going to do that. They begged, borrowed, stole every last dime they could. They even put the Ford emblem, you know, the Ford emblem, they put that in the pawn shop to raise money. Believe it or not, they hocked the Ford emblem. I don't know who the hell lent them money based on the Ford emblem. It's been around for 100 years. I don't know. And they did not go through bankruptcy. They did not take any money from the federal government. And because of that, people would go into a Ford dealership. I've been buying GM cars for 40 years, but I ain't never going to buy another government motors car again. I want to buy me a Ford because you didn't take any money from the government. Now, Jim Mullally, he's a genius. He knew that if GM and Chrysler went under, Ford would have gone under. Why? Because if GM and Chrysler went under, Johnson Controls and Magna, and all the other manufacturers, Lear, all the manufacturers that manufacture the parts that go into the cars, because they all, you know, Ford, GM, Chrysler, they don't make catalytic converters. Somebody else makes them for them, and they're usually the same company. So if they would have gone under, GM and Chrysler, so would the parts distributor, the parts manufacturers, and Ford would have gone under. But he was a genius. He said, we're not taking a dime from the government. We will do whatever we can. And sure enough, it was worked out perfectly for him. You understand? Yeah, I don't like cars. Ask me about bicycles, okay? So I'm not the best person to ask about. Anyway, so how are we going? All right, Walmart. Where do you put Walmart?
Blue chip.
Blue chip. Yeah, they're one of the biggest corporations in America. What else can we say about them? Can we put them in any other categories? Retail. Often cyclical. Retail is often cyclical, but in the case of Walmart, they actually did a little bit better than the other retailers when the economy went through a recession because people downscaled. You know, where they normally would go to JCPenney's, they went to Walmart. They normally go to Nordstrom's, they go to JCPenney's. They downscaled.
You know where the Walmart is growing in
Mexico? Oh, around the world,
too.
Yeah, they're not smart.
They like copy the things that you can fly. So inside the Walmart, they make juices and everything.
And they have a tortilleria.
Yeah, they're taking the dishes from the other.
Yeah. And Mexico has a long tradition of these mercados, which are awesome.
Yeah, look at mercado.
Yeah, it looks like a mercado. So they're not stupid, folks. They're not dumb. Okay, what about Starbucks? Well, for years they were a growth company. In fact, about, I don't know, 5-6 years ago, they said, they have about 14,000 or 12,000 of these things around the world. We're going to have 40,000 Starbucks in the next 10 to 15 years. Which, what the hell are they going to put them on top of one another? They already got them across the street from one another in some places. And then a couple of years later, they went, you know, we're going to actually close 600 stores. So they used to be growth. Now, I don't know where the hell, I guess you still put them under growth. Defensive? I guess they're selling drugs, right?
Yeah.
They're selling caffeine, which is a drug, so I guess you put them in defensive. All right, Sears, Kmart. Goner. Yeah, turn around. Put them in turnaround. Because are they turning around? No, you have two people who are drowning. You throw them a lifeline to each other. You think they're going to make it? When you go down H Street, which parking lot has more cars? Costco or Kmart? Yeah, okay. How about General Mills? Defense, definitely. Blue Chip, they're a blue chip company. They make Cheerios, Wheaties, make all kinds of foodstuffs.
So turn around and go together.
Well, it's up to you, you know. turn around, you could call them turnaround. And you could hope that Sears and Kmart are around in 10 years? I don't know. You could put turnaround or goner. And remember, you could also put cyclical because they're a retail company. And Sears used to be where America shops. Now it's where America slops. Okay. What about Union Pacific Railroad? Where do you put railroads? Defensive. Well, they're always going to be railroads, but transportation companies are often cyclical because they have to move the stuff. Before the stuff can get developed, it has to get there, and then it has to get to where it's going to be sold. So we often put railroads and other transportation companies in cyclical. But there's another thing about railroads. What are railroads sitting on that was given to them 180 years ago, 160 years ago? A lot of land. They own big chunks of downtown USA, and they are going to make money. Remember the Chargers Stadium they want to build downtown? It's not Union Pacific. I think it's Burlington, Santa Fe. But it's sitting on a big chunk of their land, and they're gonna profit from that. Michelin? Turnaround. They're foreign, right? Where are they based? La France. But they also own Goodrich. They own what's the one? Uniroyal. Yeah, they are a blue chip company, but they're global blue chip company. You can put down blue chip, you can put down foreign, and because they sell tires, they're also cyclical because they're making stuff. So you can put down any of those three. But they're not a blue chip American company. They're a blue chip foreign France. Those Frenchies, and you know, they have socialized medicine. Do you remember 10 years ago? I was actually more than 10 years ago. The French did not support Bush's Iraq invasion. We started calling them freedom fries, not French fries. Okay. What?
That shows them.
That shows them, right. And they go, we don't call them French fries. We just call them fries. They call them pommes frites. Pommes frites. Potato fries. Okay. Alcoa. Aluminum Corporation of America. Yeah, cyclical. They make stuff. They make materials. Alcoa makes aluminum. They make other materials, but that's they're very sick. They're a blue chip, too. They're a blue chip. And then El Paso Electric? Penny? No. El Paso Electric. That's the electric company for Southwest Texas. Yeah, I guess together. Yeah, utilities, for the most part, they're not really going anywhere. So we could call them defensive. And often they're sitting on a lot of land. But utilities are also income, normally. We have to take a look at what they're paying. So you could put down income. You could put down defensive because they ain't going anywhere. They tend not to follow the cycle because unless they're in an area that's growing greatly. Because how many people are going to start taking showers in the dark, cold showers in the dark? I don't know. But also, you could also put down asset play because utilities are often, not always, sitting on a ton of land. SDG&E owes a ton of Southern California, right? And then there were people, they were taking a lot of land back in the 70s. People were really upset about that. Questions, thoughts, ideas? Yeah, I put down, railroads to me are asset plays, but they're also cyclical because they're not going anywhere. But they do better when the economy is doing better because there's more stuff that needs to be moved around, and they do worse when the economy does badly. Okay, now, capitalization. We've used this phrase over and over again, and we don't necessarily know exactly what it means. We know it has something to do with the size of the company. Well, now we're going to know what it means because there are three major categories: large cap, mid cap, and small cap. And you can think of them as the papa bear, the mommy bear, and the baby bear. I don't know if that helps, but go right ahead. Anything about, and we got to remember that there's some people who change the categories, but anything greater than $10 billion or so is considered large cap. Remember, Daniel, everything's on the website. You don't have to, you can download it. But Joey, go right ahead and take pictures. It's up to you. Anything greater than $10 billion. And most of the household names that you've heard of, they're large cap companies. Mid cap companies are $1 or $2 billion. It depends on who you talk to. Up to about $10 billion. Some people say $1 billion is still a small cap. Some people say, no, you're getting into the mid cap world. and then less than 1 or 2 billion, can you read my writing? I apologize, is considered small cap. Now, these are the ones I want you to know. There are two subcategories that you'll hear people talk about. Anything above 100 billion is called mega cap. So these are the very large companies, the Walmarts of the world, the Apple, ExxonMobil, Microsoft. And then anything below about 100 million or so, sometimes 50 million, those are called microcap. So you should really learn these, but the one, two, or three are the ones I'm going to hold you to. You should really know mega cap, because you'll hear people use the phrase, and you should really know what you're talking about when you hear micro cap. But it's sort of self-explanatory. Micro is very small companies. And then we shouldn't even discuss penny stocks, which, you know, are just basket cases. So let's take a look at a couple of examples. This is an example, and I don't know what happened, but on my computer, it's a multiply sign. But here it turns into a religious symbol, so I apologize. But this price is $20. And there's 5 million shares. If you multiply 20 times 5 million, you get $100 million of market capitalization. This is a small cap stock. The stock price, for the most part, students, is irrelevant. You must look at the market cap to see what the company is worth. Do you remember Warren Buffett's Berkshire Hathaway? Stock was worth $225,000 a share. Well, what's the company worth? You got to look at the market cap. A stock is worth $20. Is it cheap? Is it expensive? You don't know. You got to look at the market cap. And people concentrate on the stock price, and they don't realize that there's a very much more important number behind that. And that's what I'm asking you. Look it up. You don't have to calculate it, but we're going to calculate it on the worksheet in a minute. But here's a couple of companies, Walmart and Target. Now, just a few weeks ago, they were selling at a very similar price, $87.50 or $76. And just from looking at the price, you might think that Target and Walmart are about the same size, right? Now, count intuitively. Are Target and Market the same size? No, they are very different sizes. Pass a couple to over here and pass a couple to here. And so, yes, indeed, as soon as we look at the number of shares outstanding, there are 3.22 billion shares outstanding of Walmart and only 637 million shares. So it turns out that Walmart, as of February 5th, was worth $282 billion, whereas Target was worth $48.5 billion. Do we have everybody have one? Okay, so obviously Target is still a large cap company, isn't it? It's above $10 billion, but Target is one sixth the size of a Walmart. Make sense? So what do people key on? They key on the price, right? Is the price important? No. What's important? The market cap. That's more important. Here's a couple of companies you may have heard of, AT&T and Verizon. Which one do you think is bigger? Verizon's actually a little bit bigger. For years, AT&T was bigger. Then Verizon did some strange accounting things where they were actually Verizon and Vodafone, which is a company based in the UK. If you go to Europe, you'll see Vodafone a lot. And they had to untwine themselves. And Verizon actually got bigger. So there's 5.19 billion shares of AT&T, 4.16 billion shares of Verizon. So the market capitalization of AT&T is actually $181 billion. Verizon's $205 billion. But they're both mega cap stocks, right? They're called a duopoly because they basically run the telecommunications world in mobile and to some extent telephone, but they don't even care about that anymore. Sprint and T-Mobile are both very, very small compared to these guys. Yes? It wasn't a stock split. I forget exactly how they did it, but they had to unwind. Because Vodafone and Verizon were intertwined with one another. And Verizon for several years wanted to break free. And I forget exactly what they had to do, but they had to come up with a ton of cash to pay off Vodafone. But they wound up with all the assets. And I'm not exactly sure how it worked. I don't really propose to understand it. But they basically had to give Vodafone a very sweet, big sweetheart deal to separate. That's my... Look it up. Look it up if you're interested. Yes.
So, AT&T is smaller because the price is smaller.
AT&T is smaller because not only is the price smaller, if you multiply 34.95 times 5.19 billion, you wind up with 181 billion. Whereas 49.42 cents times 4.6 billion, this is about 80%. You see, 80, they have about 20% less stock. So you get 205 billion. Do the calculations. Make sure I did it right. But the price is about, you know, what, 40% higher than AT&T. But they're both huge companies. And they are trying their best to stop net neutrality. Have you noticed that? They want to be able to make money off of charging Netflix more and Yahoo more and the rest of us, screw. We don't care about you. Oh, well. Okay. Now, okay, so let's take a look at worksheet number 3. Given the following stocks and stock data, name the market or exchange that you believe the company would be on, and let's calculate the market capitalization. Again, this is as of February 4th. So, Marriott International. Where would you put Marriott International? The New York Stock Exchange? The Amex, the NASDAQ, the OTC. Yeah, you would put it in NYSE, and you'd be right up until a couple of years ago when they turned around and moved over to the NASDAQ. See? The Marriott was on the New York Stock Exchange for decades. And they then got a deal, they got a call from NASDAQ down the street and said, you know what, we'll offer you a deal if you come to us, we'll charge you less than the New York Stock Exchange. And Marriott said, all right, yes.
What's NASDAQ here?
Global Select. Uh-oh. That's the creme de la creme. Okay. And then there's the Select and then there's the Capital Markets. I forget, look it up, I forget. I just okay, NASDAQ. Okay, now, I got the answers there. Hide those answers. Hide that answer. Oh, hide that answer. Okay. So, what's the market price? Marriott? $75.94. And now, how do you calculate this? Because there are 283.36 million shares. Well, my advice is don't try to type the whole number, unless you've got a scientific calculator. Just leave it at 283.36 million. You with me? Nod your head yes? Okay, got your calculators? So 75.94 times 283.36. Everybody's got their calculators. What'd you get? 21,518.36. And then write the word million. Now, this is the answer. You could leave the answer like this, 21,518 million, but is that how you're going to see it? Does that make sense? No. Move the decimal point 3 to the left and put 21.5 billion. And all you really need is the B. That's what you'll see. You see the B. Make sense? Nod your heads. Okay, now, what market type is that? I mean, what market cap is that?
Large.
That's a large. Everyone should say large. What market type? Market cap? Large. And where do you put stock type for Marriott? Yeah. Companies that are involved in the business cycle, such as hotels, if the business cycle is up, there's more business travel. And also there's more leisure travel because people have more money. So hotels and other types of leisure and hospitality are cyclical. Questions, thoughts?
Like service industry,
yeah. Service industry. Okay, next one. Ryder Trucks. Where would you find Ryder Trucks? They got the symbol R. Now, not too many companies have a single-digit symbol. F for Ford, C for Citigroup, T for telephone, AT&T. But Ryder's got R. And where is it? You don't have to be right, folks. There's only three choices, and you can guess. New York Stock Exchange, right. They're on the NYSE. And they've been there for decades, and they got the symbol R, and they ain't giving it up. So their stock price is $88.46 times how many shares? 53.04, and write the word million. Now, 88.46 times 53.04. The faster you do the calculation, the faster we'll get out of here.
4,691.918.
And then write the word million. And this would be the answer. You don't have to change it. But how are we going to see it? Right. What they're going to do is they're going to move the decimal point three to the left, and you'll get 4.69B with a billion. That's what you'll see. Or maybe 4.7. I can see you're excited about this. Okay. Is this a Papa Bear, Mama Bear, or Baby Bear? Mama Bear, you see, it's between 1 or 2 billion up to 10 billion. And they get the symbol R. Figure that one out. They're not even a large cap company. Is this making sense? It's good to write it. You're going to do it by yourself. You're listening. You're going to do it later on. Okay, that's Ryder. So where do you put Ryder Trucks, a company that makes Ryder Trucks? Right, transportation, they are cyclical. All right, our next one, Adamis Pharmaceuticals. Who the hell is this? Adamis Pharmaceuticals? Where? It's actually here in San Diego. Check A dump. I wouldn't want that symbol. A dump. It's not my symbol. Where do you think they're going to be? Yes, in fact, they were threatened to be kicked off the NASDAQ, but they're still on the NASDAQ. They used to be on the OTC. So they are a company that's trying to break the rule. They're trying to become a real legitimate company. And I don't know if A Dump's going to make it. And this is the kind of stock I was a sucker for, 20 years, not quite 20 years ago. So recent stock price is $6.26. How many shares? Only 10.55 million. So what do we get? 043 million. And do we move the decimal point? No. What is this? Small. You might even put them in micro cap. Yeah. So what do we call Adamis Pharmaceuticals? Not quite a penny stock. And they are trying to make it in the big world. I would put down aggressive growth or speculative or goner. We'll see. One of these companies, folks, is going to be the next Amgen or Biogen IDEC, which is a company that started here and then merged with a biotech company in Boston. One of these companies is going to hit the big time. You just don't know when. The others are all going to go. And I put down the word spec. You can put growth. You can put growth because they're trying to. They're trying to hit the big time. Look them up. Check it out. Do you like biotech?
They have some investigation going on.
Right. They're hoping. They're praying. They're wishing. And they may do it. They may come up with the next blockbuster. Because the biotech world is going to change the world far more than the computer world did. Mm-hmm. You think your cell phone and your internet has changed the world. Wait till you see what's coming down the pike. We're not in 20 years from now, we will not recognize the world. Mm-hmm. And I hope they have immortality by the time I'm dead. Before I'm dead. Yes.
They already got it.
Immortality? They're working on it.
They already got it.
In sci-fi?
No, in reality, the guys say you can live for 500. I was looking at the
Okay, well, we'll see. There was a sci-fi book. Okay, please do. Good. Okay, I'm glad to hear that because I'm getting older. There was a sci-fi book, I don't know, 30, 40 years ago, that it was Sisyphus. It was, I don't know if you know the myth of Sisyphus, but Sisyphus is the guy every day he has to get up and push the rock to the top of the hill, and then the next day it rolls down and he's got to push it back up. It's symbolic for life, right? And so this book was basically the same thing, but it was sci-fi. And there was immortality. You could pay $1 million to live for another 10 years. And during that 10 years, your entire life was spent getting the next $1 million so that you could live for another 10 years. And if you ever decided that you weren't going to do that, you wanted to live your life, you died after 10 years. It was pretty cool. Anyway, let's continue. All right, yeah, the question, James?
I was saying, by 2045, you're going to introduce something similar to what you're saying.
Okay, well, hopefully I'll still be alive by then. I'll make it until then. Okay. 2045, I don't know, that's 30 years, I don't know. Oracle, you ever heard of Oracle? No? Every time you go to that ATM machine, every time you swipe your card, you are most likely using Oracle software. Maybe you might be using DB2, which is IBM, and there's a couple others that are around, but the big one is Oracle. They are very much deep in the roots of the global electronic economy. They make the databases that virtually everybody uses for their big banks and the like and transactions. So what was the recent stock price? Where would you think you find them? The NASDAQ until a couple years ago when they moved over to the New York Stock Exchange. It's like they were on the NASDAQ for decades and were very happy with the NASDAQ. They were a high-tech company. And then they moved over to the New York Stock Exchange. So the competition, it's good for America. I don't know, but it drives you nuts. You're trying to live it. $42.42, but 4.39 billion shares outstanding. So what happens when you multiply 4.42 times 4.39? 186.2238, or just 2. 186.2 is good enough. $1 billion of market capitalization. So if you wanted to buy Oracle, you would walk on down to the New York Stock Exchange with $186 billion, and say, I want to buy Oracle. Does it work that way? No. Because as soon as you started to accept every ask price that was out there, what would happen to the price? It would start going up. And people would go, what the hell's going on? Somebody's buying all the shares of Oracle. So for that reason, when one company wants to take another company over, they go to the New York Stock Exchange and they say, look, Oracle's selling for $42.42. It's worth $186 billion. It's a large cap?
Mega cap,
yeah, really. But large cap is good. And we will offer $45 or $46. Or, and you know, calculate whatever that market cap is. Because they have to. They have to offer a premium. And of course, if you had inside information about this, you see, so it's very highly regulated. They go to the New York Stock Exchange, look, we're coming up with a tender offer, it's called a tender offer, at $46 a share or whatever. And then there's a set methodology, throughout the day, they say, okay, we have a tender offer for Oracle, $46 a share. Now, if the investors believe it is a bona fide offer, boom, the stock price will go to $46 immediately. You with me? Understand what's going on? If they believe that it's a bogus offer, they won't. It might stay or go down. Who knows? If they believe another company is going to want to bid for them, the price might go higher.
Like an auction.
Exactly. It's always going on. And so that's called a tender offer. Check it out. I'm not going to ask you to know anything about that in the exam. So here we go. It is $186 billion mega cap, and it's now on the New York Stock Exchange. Cool? Questions? Thoughts? Yeah, I'm sorry. For years it was growth, but now what would you call them? Blue chip, and they're cyclical. Because now they have their roots so deep into the economy that when the economy does well, there's more transactions, Oracle makes more money. There's more need for their database software. And when the economy does poorly, but they are now a blue chip. They were a growth. They're still growing, folks. They're still growing. Don't get me wrong. But they're like Microsoft and Intel. They're growing much slower than they used to. All right, so now let's spend a few moments talking about different investment strategies. And my, I try not to bias you, but I tell you my bias is right up front. I'm a buy and hold kind of guy. You use fundamental analysis to identify high-quality companies with good growth prospects and potential for dividends at reasonable prices. There's that word again, value investing. It's often called value investing. And people say, well, you only invest in low PE companies. Not necessarily. If I believe, or buy and hold investors believe, that a high PE company is a good value, go ahead, put it into your portfolio. But do we like dividends? Yes, we do. Some people call it GARP, which I think is a great... You ever read the book, World According to GARP? They made a movie of it. It wasn't very good, but the book was great. Growth at a reasonable price. And how long do you hold it? Well, we're going to see that 3 to 5 year time horizon that we saw Mr. Rothenberg talk about, and we're going to see that in Chapter 6. But when they asked Warren Buffett, well, you're a buy and hold kind of investor, aren't you, Mr. Buffett? Oh, yes. Well, how long should you hold it? He said, hold it forever. Now, he's being a bit facetious because you don't live forever, right? Eventually, you're going to want to sell your stocks to live off of them. But what he's trying to get you to do is, look, if you bought a business and you were happy with that business, would you just sell it because it went up 20% or 10%? No, you'd hang on to it. You'd hang on to it. And so we're going to take a look at a very quick, I forgot to put this on the screen, so let's put it on the screen now. And meanwhile, I'm going to hide it because okay. Okay, where is it? Don't lose perspective. Here it is. This is the MSCI World Index from 1990 to the year 2000, month by month. Do you think you could guess next month where it's going to be? No, and neither could I, and I don't think anybody can. I mean, people will tell you they can, and you'll read, well, I think it's going to go up, I think it's going to go down, I think it's going to stay, I don't know what the hell is going to happen in the next 2, 3, 4, 6 months.
What is the VIX factor
stock? The VIX, you're talking about the VIX?
Yes.
The VIX. The VIX, the volatility index. This is called the scaredy cat index, or the fear index. When the VIX goes up, there's lots of volatility, and people are frightened. When the VIX goes down, there's less volatility, and people are not as frightened. And when the VIX goes down, traditionally, that means the market's going to fall because people are complacent. And when the VIX goes up, that means the market's going to go up because now people are frightened. It happens a lot. Not always, though. It's not a perfect correlation. But the VIX index, the volatility index. Now, I'd like to find out. I can't find out. But I think the VIX only goes up when the market goes down, not when there's volatility on the upside. I don't think it measures upside volatility. I think it only measures downside volatility. I need to find that out. And if anybody can figure that out, look up, find it if you can. But can you figure out what's going to happen in the market next month or two? No. But if you just keep a long-term perspective, this is what you should see. That's the MSCI Global Index from 1990 to the year 2000. So the volatility is real, dear students. You're going to feel like you're kicked in the gut when the market falls, but if you keep a long-term perspective, and the world doesn't end, if the world ends, it doesn't matter, but as the global economy continues to expand, and we are well rewarded as long-term patient investors. Questions, thoughts, ideas? No? No, the MSCI Global Index, here it is, right, see? It's not called the Global Index, it's called the World Index. And you need to know that because it's going to be on the exam. All the indices, you got to know all the ones on the worksheet number one. The indices on the MSCI World Index includes United States companies. Remember, global world means todo el mundo, everybody. International foreign means except the United States. Okay? Mm. All right, now, income strategy. Income strategy is actually pretty cool. It's part of a long-term strategy. Remember the equity income mutual funds that emphasize dividends over capital appreciation? Your stock went down. Good, I can buy more at a lower price and get a better dividend yield. What? Everybody wants the stock price to go up. Not necessarily. Ideally, what you're looking for are companies that are growing their dividends. Because companies that pay consistently growing dividends tend to do well when the market as a whole and have, as a whole drops, does poorly, and have been some of the best long-term performers. And we'll take a look at dividend growers starting on Thursday and next Tuesday. These, in general, are appropriate for conservative stock investors. Now, we're not talking about politics. We're talking about stock investors who want to invest in the stock world but are not looking to shoot the lights out, make eye-popping returns, but also don't want to experience gut-wrenching falls. This strategy works well with the dividend reinvestment plans that we talked about. You buy a company like Exxon that's going to be around for 50 years, right? You think they're going to be around for 50 years? Are we going to lose our appetite for oil? Not likely. And then you simply collect the dividend checks. Well, they're not checks anymore. It's all electronic. Stocks, which I've said that, right? Stocks which have long histories of consistent dividend increases have often been the market's best long-term investments. The next strategy, The next strategy is the growth strategy. You're looking for companies that are growing. Dividends are a secondary concern. They usually have high price-to-earnings ratios in expectation of higher earnings in the future. They are the stars. They're on the cover of GQ and Vogue and Vanity Fair. Everybody wants to jump on the bandwagon as the company is experiencing strong growth. Subsequently, the stock price is often bid up to very high levels, so these are typically the riskiest companies. And if that growth, or when that growth, when the slightest hint of slow growth in the stock appears, what happens to the price of the stock? It gets hammered. You have to be ready for that. And you calculus fans, these people are not looking at the first derivative. They're looking at the second derivative. And if you don't know what the hell I'm talking about, don't worry about it. But that means they're looking at how fast the growth rate is accelerating. They're not only looking at how fast the company is growing, but they're also looking at the acceleration of the growth rate. So even if it's still growing, folks, if the growth just starts to taper off, bang, the stock is hammered. Are you with me? That doesn't mean you shouldn't invest in there. Ricardo?
Is oil company stock cheaper or more expensive when gas prices are higher or lower?
Well, you know what? I've tried to figure out. I've watched oil company stocks because they've been very good long-term investments. But in the intermediate term, you can't. There's often no correlation. They've been hit, but not hit as hard as you would think they were because of the stock price, the price of gas going down, price of oil going down. They've been hit, but when the price of oil was going up, price of stock gas was going up, they didn't go up that high either. So I think for the most part, I'm just guessing, but you can't gotta talk to every investor who invests in oil companies. People are just very happy to hold on to Royal Dutch Petroleum and ConocoPhillips and Exxon and Mobil and just hold on to it and get paid dividends. And now might be a good time. Where do we see the PEs of these companies? They're very low. But they're usually very low. Very rarely would they go high. I don't know why more people are not interested in oil companies. It's not as though we're going, people say, oh, well, we're all going to go electric, we're going to go solar. Yeah, we're going to add those to our mix, but the demand for oil is not going to go away. If oil weren't around, we'd have to invent it. That's how cool it is. I mean, oil is such a cool commodity. It is so amazing what you can do with oil. And so it's not going away. Now, the aggressive growth strategy, folks, where am I doing? I'm not writing these. That's okay. You can write them. This is the strategy that I think many people think they're supposed to use, right? They're going to buy and sell. And they got four monitors and looking what's going on in all these different places. And, oh, something happened. Just sell. Something happened. Buy. Ugh. Boosh. It used to be that people would go after, eye-catching returns in 3 to 6 months. But then it moved down to weeks and then days, and now we have what's called high-frequency trading, where the computers are trading with one another, and you can't even begin to compete with these people. So, you know, if you want to do this, if you believe you're going to be the next Jim Cramer or whatever the guy's name is, who says, drop everything and trade, or whatever it is, stop trading and what does he say? Who watches this guy? Anybody?
I do, but I haven't seen him in a while.
I haven't seen, what does he say? Stop everything and drop, or stop trading and what does he say? Whatever he says. Folks, this is fraught with peril and drawbacks, not the least of which are the serious transaction costs that can be generated as a result of frequent trading. Because every time you trade, you pay a commission. Stockbrokers simply adore these suckers. I'm sorry, I mean these traders who use this strategy. So sure, if you want to do it, take 10% or 5% of your portfolio and buy and sell and buy and sell. And all I can say is good luck. And at the beginning of the semester, I told you I couldn't help you, didn't I? And I'll show you technical analysis in a couple of weeks. And you can, if you believe that it's worthwhile to you, you can look at the squiggles on the screen and say, okay, it's going to go up, it's going to go down. George will teach that, okay, George? Let's work together on that. Okay, now, here's a very good strategy, but it's not easy to do. There are not too many of them, and it's tough. You got to be able to sit on your hands and wait for the world to end. Contrarian strategy is a strategy where investors invest in stocks that are out of favor. And we have some contrarians here. We have some contrarians here, which I like. As reflected by low price-to-earnings ratios, low prices compared to their fundamentals, contrarian investors actively seek stocks from companies with sound financial statements that the market is undervalued. A very famous contrarian investor said, I always try to be accommodating. I buy when others want to sell, and I sell when others want to buy. Understand? Everybody's running this way? I'll run that way. Being a contrarian is difficult, though. Why? Because the market tends to rise 3 or 4 years for every 1 year it goes down. So if you're always selling when people are buying very quickly, you won't have any stocks to sell, right? And one gentleman who is a very famous contrarian said, look, it's not a steady business. You have to be willing to sit on your hands and wait for the world to fall apart, and then be ready to swoop in. And Warren Buffett is a very famous contrarian investor. And did he follow his own advice? Yes. In 2008, when the market crashed, he put out a opinion piece in the New York Times saying, I'm investing in America. And I think we're going to be around. We're not going to disappear. Because remember, people really thought the end of the world, I don't remember, 6 years ago. But people really thought the end of the world was nigh. And he went in, rushed in and bought $5 billion. I didn't give you one. $5 billion of GE, $5 billion of Goldman Sachs. And then eventually, a year and a half later, $10 billion of Bank of America. And all three have been fabulous trades for him. But he had to wait the whole decade for this to happen. That's kind of tough. It's kind of tough to be a contrarian. All right. So last slide. Are we on one? Oh, no. These three. Stay away from sector rotation or momentum investing, the greater fool theory and market timing. I like this one. People who tell you that they can time the market, don't. It's like the people who tell you that the fish got caught away or something like that. Don't try to time the market at the bottom. Sell at the top. It can't be done except by liars. That's a very famous gentleman, Bernard Baruch. So very quickly, I'm trying to get through this. And I wanted to get through Chapter 5 by the end of the day, and I did. What strategy do you favor? See, I shouldn't say that. I should get rid of that slide because I've already basically tipped my hand and told you I like buy and hold. So you go, oh, I do what Mr. Banner does. I don't want you to do that. I don't want you to do that. All right, now, do you read books, you millennials? You do? You're a millennial who reads books? Oh, my goodness. I'm so happy to see. Where's Lily? She's not here today, darn it.
I'm a Gen Xer.
But millennials don't read books. They don't. What? I'm sorry? In your Kindle. Well, that's fine. It's a book, right? So this is the book for you, folks. The first book that you should read is One Up on Wall Street. It was written by Peter Lynch. We'll talk about Peter Lynch later on. And it's a very good book. It's not what you think it is. He is very down to earth. He was one of the best money managers of the 20th century. After you've read that, or maybe before you've read that, you can read A Random Walk Down Wall Street. And many of the stuff I steal from him. I steal some from Peter Lynch, too, and Benjamin Graham. But Burton Malkiel is a very famous professor who worked with Vanguard, and the mutual fund company. And it's a really great book. He skewers fundamental analysis and technical analysis and random walk. He skewers everybody. He's like me. He likes to make everybody angry. And then eventually you're going to want to read The Intelligent Investor. Don't read it first. It's very difficult to get through Mr. Graham's prose. But now the books that are coming out, The Intelligent Investor, they have commentary by a gentleman by the name of Jason Zweig. Excellent. So you read what Mr. Graham wrote, and you go, scratch your head, and then you read Mr. Zweig says, now this is what Ben was trying to get you to do. And so, because he's kind of hard to understand. But then the rest of these books are very, very good books, and you should read them all. But you don't have to read them for the semester, okay? Read them whenever you can to. And if you have any questions, all right, now on Thursday, if you have any questions about these books, because I've read them all, well, I didn't actually finish Security Analysis. But on Thursday, we start Chapter 6. Bring your thinking caps. Get ready to stretch your minds. And get here at 9:30. Okay. Who snuck in late? Yeah, wait a minute. One at a time.